It's now 5 years since the military in Myanmar overthrew the democratically elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi. The Myanmar junta, including its leader, Min Aung Hlaing, could now face prosecution for war crimes and crimes against humanity in an unexpected place, because the government of Timor-Leste has just appointed a prosecutor to look into evidence that was presented to it in Dili by the Chin Human Rights Organisation. Chris Gunness is the director and founder of the Myanmar Accountability Project, which is supporting this novel legal approach. And Chris joins us this morning. Chris, thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
It's my pleasure, Julian. Thanks for having me on.
So why was this proposal to prosecute Myanmar's leaders taken to Timor-Leste of all places?
Timor-Leste in its penal code has a very interesting provision. It specifically allows what they call universal jurisdiction. Universal jurisdiction is based on the idea that some crimes are so grave and so serious that it doesn't matter where the crime was committed, it doesn't matter what the nationalities of the perpetrators or the victims are, states have an obligation to bring those perpetrators to justice. It's the idea that it's a crime against all of us. It's a crime literally against humanity. So we went to the authorities in Dili and we said, here are some Chin Christians like you. East Timor is a, Timor-Leste is a predominantly Christian country. And we said, under your penal code, you have an obligation to go after these people. So what we've asked for is an investigation to be opened. We've asked for arrest warrants to be issued once that investigation has shown that this is appropriate. And interestingly, and by the way, unprecedentedly within ASEAN, the legal authorities there have appointed a very senior prosecutor to look into the viability of the case. And as I say, it's groundbreaking in terms of the law. This is the first time that a member state of ASEAN has begun legal action which could see a case against the leader of a fellow ASEAN nation. So it's it's a real game changer.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Obviously, as you said, that you focused on crimes against the Chin people in Myanmar. What's become, Chris, of efforts to try and take Myanmar's leaders to the international institutions for crimes against humanity, like the International Court of Justice or the ICC, the International Criminal Court?
Well, let me begin by saying that I applaud the efforts of these two international courts that are both based in The Hague. The International Court of Justice, the so-called ICJ, adjudicates disputes between states. And since 2019, i.e. for nearly 7 years, there has been a case there. And what I would say is that justice delayed is justice denied. I pray that Myanmar is found guilty of violating the Genocide Convention, but it's taken an awfully, it will have taken an awfully long time for the court to get there. The other court, the International Criminal Court, rather than adjudicating disputes between states, they actually go after individuals. Now, what's happened there is that the prosecutor in the court has announced that he wants the court to issue arrest warrants against Min Aung Hlaing, the senior general who led the coup, but it's far from clear whether those arrest warrants have actually been issued. So what we have is, yes, there is action in the international courts, but frankly, it's too little and it's very, very late. That's why we say it's an obligation on member states to allow these cases to be heard. And frankly, it's that delay, it's the lack of action in these international courts, which makes our case in Dili even more pressing for the victims. And to be very, very clear, we have brought evidence of five absolutely horrendous crimes. First of all, the gang rape of a 7-month pregnant woman in front of her husband. Secondly, the massacre of 10 people, including a journalist and a 13-year-old boy who was among 8 people who had their hands tied behind their backs and their throats slit. Forgive me for saying, you know, these details at breakfast time. Thirdly, the deliberate killing of a Christian pastor and 3 deacons, a deliberate killing of 4 Christian officials, as it were. Fourthly, a disproportionate disproportionate and indiscriminate aerial attack on a hospital, which killed 4 medical staff and 4 patients. And very lastly, a series of attacks on Christian churches, which are civilian infrastructures protected under international law. So these are real crimes with real named perpetrators, and we are going after them.
Yes, right. And so you recently met with Timor-Leste's president, José Ramos Horta, to brief him about these cases and the push for a prosecution. What was his response to the information that you provided in that briefing?
Well, first of all, your audience will know that he is a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and he won that because of his heroic stand against the injustices that were perpetrated by the Indonesian army of occupation between 1975 and 1999. So he's very much on the side of the oppressed, and he's very much on the side who are looking for justice for these international crimes. It was very interesting because the day after we filed our complaint at the prosecutor's office, we met with him first thing in the morning, and we said to him, look, please, the message has got to be that Timor-Leste has an independent judiciary and there must be no political interference, particularly not from the Myanmar junta. And we can get on to their reaction perhaps in a minute. But within about 2 hours of us leaving his office, he put out an incredibly powerful statement saying that he had met with our delegation. We discussed regional accountability mechanisms, a clear signal to ASEAN. He said that it was important to go after what he called the Myanmar junta's reign of terror against the civilian population. And he said he fully supported the legal process in Dili. You know, from that very highest levels, there was a clear signal that this enjoyed support.
Okay, now, so Chris, I wanted to ask you.
For the government.
Yes, I understand that. Chris, I wanted to ask you, the statement that your organisation put out refers to the criminal file being presented to the Timorese prosecutor. What's the process from here? It seems to suggest from that statement that the prosecutor may still decide not to pursue the case. Is that right?
That is a possibility, but the signals we're getting, first of all, they have appointed the Deputy Prosecutor General of East Timor as the man to look into this case. Now, I think if they were going to say, no, we can't do this, I don't think they would have appointed anyone. And if they were feeling forced to appoint someone, they would have appointed someone very, very junior. Secondly, as I say, we met with other people, the head of Fretilin, the resistance organization that resisted Indonesian occupation, a man called Marty Al-Khatiri. Again, he was absolutely fulsome in his support for what we are doing. What has to happen now is that they have to look into what is possible. And to be very clear to your audience, Timor-Leste is a very young jurisdiction. I'm sorry if that sounds patronizing, but they have to look into whether they have the capacity. So, you know, they have to, it's a very complex and sophisticated process that has to happen. They have to look into whether this country has the ability, has the infrastructure, the frameworks to go after.
Yeah, it'd be a big undertaking.
Criminals committing into, so there is actually an organization which Australia, your tax dollars, fund very fulsomely, which is called the Independent Investigative Mechanism for Myanmar, the so-called IIMM. And since 2018-19, they have been collecting evidence. They have amassed millions of pieces of evidence, and they are mandated to hand over that evidence to the Timor-Leste authorities. And what we're hoping, if they do move further on with this trial, as I say, this process, and as I say, there's every indication they may, then the IIMM will be able to submit evidence which has been checked, double-checked, reconfirmed. And I think that will take a lot of pressure off the Timor-Leste judiciary.
Chris, you mentioned the role of Timor-Leste in ASEAN, and also I'd be interested to know how ASEAN has reacted and if you've had any reaction from the junta in Myanmar.
Well, it's a very interesting question. I mean, the predictable reaction from the junta was to call in the Timorese charge, issue a strong condemnation, and to say that this is an interference in the independence, in the internal affairs of an ASEAN member state, failing to appreciate the clanging irony that, of course, this was an interference in the independent judiciary of Timor-Leste. That aside, and that was an entirely predictable response, informally, I get the sense that those ASEAN nations which are tilting towards change in the association's policy, namely the Singaporeans, the Thais, the Malaysians, possibly even the Indonesians, are looking to this case and the prospects of accountability as a way of dealing with their profound embarrassment about what has happened in Myanmar since the coup. First of all, the so-called five-point consensus, which of course is a massive misnomer. There is no consensus, particularly not from the junta. The first point is the cessation of violence. The second part is dialogue with all parties. Well, on the first part, they've continued indiscriminate and disproportionate airstrikes against their civilian population. And on the other, before the sham election, which took place in December and January, they locked up their political opponents under newly passed legislation. Hundreds of people who criticised the electoral process were imprisoned. Some were tortured. Some were killed. So there is absolutely no doubt the five-point consensus of ASEAN is dead in the water. And I think what a lot of us, or what some, should I say, ASEAN members are saying, you know what, maybe we can work with this accountability thing. Maybe that offers a fresh new approach. And I fervently hope that that is something where the dial can be moved within ASEAN.
Chris, you mentioned universal jurisdiction, which means that courts anywhere can, in principle at least, try crimes against humanity. Has that approach been used successfully before? And I suppose if it is a universal jurisdiction, why isn't this, why aren't there prosecutions happening in other countries?
Well, there are many reasons. I mean, to answer your question, it has been used successfully. One goes back to the 1960s and the trial in Jerusalem of the Nazi Adolf Eichmann, a clear example of where a perpetrator who was not Israeli and the crimes did not take place in Israel was put on trial and found guilty. There's a case, there's a Myanmar case in Buenos Aires in Argentina where arrest warrants have been issued, incidentally, amongst others, for Aung San Suu Kyi, because her administration, civilian military administration, was accused of committing a genocide against the Rohingya, and she famously went to The Hague and gave testimony to protect, it is accused of her, the generals. That's what people say about her. There are other cases. We have a case in the Philippines, which is blocked politically, but the Philippines Penal Code allows for universal jurisdiction. We're pushing the issue there. We have a case in Indonesia, which we'll be pushing against again in April. And we have cases in Turkey and the UK. So we are pushing as far as we can to develop customary international. There are good examples of where it's happened, but in East Asia, it's not as developed, it's not as far down the road as it could be, because people haven't brought cases there. And what we're doing is we're in there, we're pushing the development of what they call customary international law, this idea that once you bring cases, you have to have an opinion, have to have a decision from a judge, and then you can go to legal challenge, and you can challenge and therefore make the laws refined and push the issue further and further. And that's what we're doing in East Asia.
And it's interesting that you've been doing in many countries, but from the sounds of things, the reception that you've been getting in Timor-Leste is more encouraging. We'll definitely keep an eye on this process. Chris Gunness, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Sunday Extra.
Thank you so much, and best wishes to all of your viewers. Thanks a million, Julian. Bye.
Thank you, Chris. That's Chris Gunness, a former BBC correspondent and now the director and founder of the Myanmar Accountability Project, and yes, the case file presented by his organisation and the Chin Human Rights Organisation is now with a judicially appointed prosecutor in Timor-Leste. This is Julian Morrow with you on Sunday Extra, and it's 25 minutes past 7.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.